Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of That Sounds Fun. I'm your host, Annie F. Downs. So happy to be here with you back in the office, back in the That Sounds Fun podcast studio. I'm so happy. Hey, the music in the background is from our good buddy, Mr. Torrin Wells. Make sure you grab a copy of his album, Citizen of Heaven. Today's episode is brought to you in part by our friends at International Justice Mission. Y'all know IJM is a global nonprofit working to end slavery and violence around the world. In short, IJM goes into some of the deepest, cruelest pain in our world, and they bring the full force of the law with them to provide justice and healing. After 20 years of hard work, more than 50,000 individuals have been set free thanks to people like you who sent IJM to rescue them. There are thousands, children, men, women, who are still waiting to be rescued. And you can make a difference in their lives by becoming a Freedom Partner. Freedom Partners give monthly so that IJM can show up month after month to rescue people from slavery and walk with survivors as they heal. Visit IJM.org/changelives to be a part of this movement for good. Your consistent support will impact the lives of individuals all over the world. Again, that's IJM.org/changelives. Hey, before we jump into the show today, I want to ask you a quick little favor if you have a second. We are going to do a podcast survey for the next couple of weeks where you want to make it short, not a long time, and it will not take you very long. But we haven't done one since May of like 2017 or 2018. It's been a long time. It's been a long time since we got to know you. And so if you can go to anniefdowns.com/survey and fill that out for us real quick, that would mean the world. anniefdowns.com/survey. Survey. And it's also linked here in the show notes. So if you don't mind doing that, that would be awesome. Today on the show is one of our good buddies. He's been here before, episode 59, episode 107. And today, Luke Norsworthy is here for us to do some catching up and also talk about his new book, Befriending Your Monsters, that just released on Tuesday. I actually was honored to write the foreword for that book and just absolutely think really, really highly of the book, of Luke, of his family. We actually, hilariously, are y'all ready for this? We got to record the episode twice because the first time I screwed up recording it, of course I did somehow, and it didn't get done correctly. So here is the better take, the second take in my podcast interview and conversation with our good buddy, Mr. Luke Norsworthy. Hitting record, Luke.
Okay, I'm going to hit record too.
Are you going to record from your side this time?
Well, I just feel like, you know, in light of what we've experienced
already. What we've been through this week.
We've been through a lot.
Tell the world what you've been through this week. I didn't have to go through it. I was just being given updates of what was happening with y'all.
Me and my new friend Chad, we've spent
a lot of time and producer Chad, BFFs this week, huh?
Yeah, he's not a mini BFF to me. He is a full-grown BFF.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of communication because this is a podcast that happened, but it didn't happen officially because... There's no record of it.
I mean, dear everyone, Luke and I already recorded this podcast and it just didn't record. We hit everything right. We did exactly what we were supposed to do. And now for reasons we don't understand, it just didn't record your side of the conversation.
You know, when my wife, whose name is Lindsay, was just a wee child.
I love her.
I do too. I'm not saying more, but probably more.
Sure.
I didn't mean to make that a competition, but I do love her as well. When she was a young child, something went wrong and her father, to assure her, said, it's nobody's fault. And I think Zane, my father-in-law, would say that to us right now. It's no one's fault.
He'd say it's not anyone's fault. It just happened. But Luke, as I told you when we started talking about it, to me, we just take things like this as signs from God. This has happened two other times in the history of 200 and almost 300 episodes.
Okay.
Three times total have I recorded episodes twice. And all three times, the second one is better than the first.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's right. As the youngest child, like I was my brother was kind of like the test run. And then I came along as the new and improved version. I feel like that's how it goes.
That's how it goes. I think you're 100% correct about that. Yeah. And I'm going to get you to pastor us for a minute.
Okay.
Because there are times in our lives, Luke Norsworthy, Pastor Norsworthy.
Yes.
When the thing doesn't work out like it's supposed to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And it all goes sideways. And whether that's a job or it's a relationship or a podcast recording.
Yep.
And what do we do with all the feelings?
I got it.
Yeah.
Let's go. So there's a story about a woman named Mary who was very good friends with Jesus, strong connection to him because he cast out 7 demons from her. You know that, Mary? Right. My personal opinion is an exorcism typically doesn't bring out the best in someone, but it brought out the worst. And then it created a bond between Jesus and Mary. So they were pretty tight. So after Jesus, I hate to spoil the story for you, but he gets crucified. He dies.
Sure.
She goes to the tomb to look for him. And what happens? He's not there. She's disappointed. And as someone who's experienced demons being cast out of her, she has this level of confidence so that she could argue with angels. And she says, where have you put this Jesus? And then Jesus shows up.
I've never thought about that, Luke.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've never had an exorcism done on you that I know of.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's a strong thing to say when you aren't really sure.
I feel like if you've had one, I would know. I feel like we're good enough friends that you would have told me that at some point.
You are 100% right. That would have come out by now in our friendship.
Yeah, continue. I feel like, this happens. She's arguing, and then Jesus shows up.
Yeah.
And Jesus is very, like, a big surprise, as a resurrected person often is. Sure. And he has to tell her, this is John chapter 20, if you're reading at home, to let go of him because something better is yet to come. There's a word in there that sometimes you got to let go of what's right in front of you. Because God has something better for you.
Whoa, Luke.
And so the resurrected Jesus is pretty great, but still Jesus says there's something better for you. And I would say that first podcast was pretty good.
Yeah.
But maybe something better is yet to come.
Yeah. Man, that's really interesting. Whenever I think about that story, and our friends listening have heard me bring this up before, but when I think about that story, I always think about our mutual friend Jason Miller teaching me about life, death, and resurrection in the Psalms, and how Mary didn't even recognize Jesus, even though he was one of her closest friends, because resurrection doesn't look like life.
Mm-hmm. Because Jesus appeared like a gardener.
Yes.
Because in the beginning, a gardener.
Say it.
In the beginning, Garden of Eden, and after the resurrection, it's another gardener, because this is a new creation. And something
I literally had never one time in my whole entire Annie-ness thought about the idea that he was a gardener on purpose. I mean, of course it was on purpose, but I'd never thought about it until you said that to me one time where you're like, yeah, he was a gardener, Annie. Like, God knew what he was telling a story. I was like, oh my gracious.
Something new's happening. Happening.
Crazy.
Yeah. But here's the thing. There's some in the old, there was some good stuff. I have a list of a few items that we discussed in the old podcast. I feel like we need to rehash.
Oh, you're just going to bring back. You. Oh, this is like me and Eddie. You're just going to bring a list. Okay, let's go.
I have 3 things on there.
Okay.
But I'm saying, like, these are good things, but we can even improve on them. I feel like one of the things that we can't omit from this podcast is the idea of you and Tom Wright coming together and to become friends.
Well, for starters, you call him Tom, which is the first proof that I'm not friends with him, because I call him Dr. N.T. Wright.
Or Bishop. You can call him that.
Is he a bishop?
Yeah, I mean, he's
also a doctor. I'm not wrong, right?
Yeah. He's definitely all those things. He's all of them. And more. And a guitar player. Who would have thought?
What?
But you had made a comment about how Tom Wright has had a big impact on Tom. He called me, he referred to me as one of his friends last time he was on the podcast, and I have told everyone
of
my friends.
Say the name of your show again, Luke.
Newsworthy
with Norsworthy. That's right. Okay, good.
That's me.
I just want everybody to have it so they can find it.
I mean, you act like you didn't know the name of my podcast.
Of course I knew the
that
name.
That sounds saddening.
That sounds heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you and N.T. Wright are friends.
He referred to me as his friend. So that's what I'm saying. And you mentioned in the, I would say vaulted, but discarded podcast that he helped you and Paul, the apostle, become better friends. And so you need to meet him. And you had a little bit of trepidation about doing a podcast with Tom Wright. And I said, you know, maybe I could be third wheel and just kind of facilitate a conducive environment for a fun conversation.
He's kind of a hero that can be intimidating to become friends with, I think. Like, he's just so smart.
Fair.
But yes, he has a book called Paul. And for our friends listening, a lot of people know that Paul's not my favorite character in the Bible. He's not my favorite, and not they aren't just characters. They're people who live on the planet. Even though his writing is very good and everything that is in the Bible is true, I struggle with his tone. Maybe a little bit more, and I struggle with his content. I want him to be nicer. That's how I feel. But he really, really, N.T. Wright's book about Paul helped me so much because he explained Paul's personality and the culture to me, which I did not previously know.
This is undoubtedly my favorite Annie. The soapbox Annie about Paul. I love it. I love it. This is my favorite one.
I don't mean to soapbox about him.
No,
he's fine.
No, you should be. Soap is a good thing. It cleans you. It sanitizes you. Keeps you from getting the corona. Soap is a good thing. And so the fact that you are using a soapbox for a secondary purpose that was even, dare I say, better than the first is just a great thing. You've done this at the church I'm a part of in Austin, and the people loved it. And by people, I mean mostly me.
Did I talk about Paul when I was there?
You did. You did this bit there too. Well, I mean, yeah, I kind of egged you on.
As you've done here.
But you don't.
Some would say.
Like it, though. You like it.
You do. What are your feelings on Paul?
I mean,
like, if you listed everybody in the New Testament, who are the ones that you think are like, man, that person is someone I would like to be like in all the ways? Because there are some ways I'd like to be like Paul. But is there anybody that you like really love?
I was thinking, like, who would you want to, this sounds bad, go get a drink with?
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. Who, like, when we get to heaven, who are you going to invite out to coffee first?
Peter.
If they are available.
Of course.
Same, yeah, Peter, same. For
sure. Yeah, I mean, he says some crazy stuff. And, like, he's all in. He's not fake. He doesn't have it all figured out, but he's all in. Like, I like that. I think...
he's all in. I love that, too. That's a great way to put it. That dude is just all in.
Yeah, I also like John. Because he refers to himself in the book that has his name on it as the disciple whom Jesus loved.
Yeah.
Anyone who's
Don't
got that sort
that?
Of, yeah, that's all like, that's my brand right there. I mean, it's like you have to be somewhat full of yourself in an obnoxious way, which I guess is my brand as well, that you put that in the Bible. Like you're going, yeah, I want people to read this and refer to me as the disciple whom Jesus loved. Okay, those are my top two. Give me your top two.
Okay, Peter, for sure.
Okay.
Peter, far and away, I cannot wait to be friends with him. Mm-hmm. I just can't wait. I think we're going to laugh. I think we're going to connect. I think he's going to be like, Annie. I'm going to be like, Peter, you know?
And
it's like
laughing?
When you see...
That's weird. I would
right?
Never
How strange. Do you know when you see celebrities meeting each other for the first time?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know each other, but they know enough about each other that they automatically are friends. It's why celebrities end up dating a lot, because they already know each other that they can just jump into a relationship, right? Peter and I are not celebrity. Well, he is. I'm not. I'm just an Annie. But when you get to heaven, I think everybody's going to know everybody. And so I think we're just going to see each other and be like, Peter. He's going to be like, Annie.
We're going to come back to your celebrity in a second, but you need to give me your second person on the list.
Oh, my second person. I do like John, too. I really like John. I think there's a lot of women I really like. Lydia's probably my next favorite. I just like how she, you know, I like that she already went to synagogue and already had this really busy, beautiful, full life. And then when Paul told her about Jesus, she made space for this new relationship. And I just have always respected that as a woman who has a busy, full life.
That I like that.
Jesus is still more important.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Thanks.
Give me the most obscure character in the Bible that you're excited to hang out with.
Oh, that's a great question. Luke, you're great at this.
Newsworthy or noteworthy? There's more of those questions.
There's a whole podcast just like this, Annie. The most obscure. Do you already have an answer?
I was asking more to hear yours, but if you want me to fill time, I'll do that.
I'd love to hear yours, but I think I have a not totally obscure, but quasi obscure.
Okay, well, go for it. Let's hear yours.
I think Joseph is very interesting. Not the father of Jesus, but the one with the Technicolor dream coat.
Like that. I mean, he's kind of one of the patriarchs. I don't know if he's really.
Yeah, he's not as obscure. You're right. You're right. You're right. Right.
I mean, he's easily top 20 people in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Power ranking, right. I would put him top 12.
Power ranking, if we were doing a draft.
Yes, for sure. I don't know if he does not make out the top 10 in that draft. Joseph, for sure. I mean,
he might even be top 10.
You know who
for sure top 10 of the Old Testament.
You know who wouldn't pick him to keep around? His brothers. We're out. Joseph, you take your coat of many colors. And
they're not in his power draft. They don't have a good score going into the big night.
But you know who would pick him number one? Potiphar's wife.
God. Oh. Potiphar's wife. Oh, man. I hope our friends listening are enjoying these these deep Bible hilarities as much as we are. Who's your obscure Bible person you'd be friends with, you will be friends with in heaven?
I like that you caveat, because there's always a question. Is Luke really getting in? Based on my previous jokes, there is some question. I would go with, do you know the guy who fell asleep during the sermon in the book of Acts and he falls out of a window?
He falls out the window.
Yes. Do you remember his name?
No.
Eutychus.
Eutychus.
Yeah, but then again, if you fell out of a window and died, Eutychus too. But but I would love to see him be like, hey, you're the one person who fell asleep in a sermon and got what they deserved. I just would like to say
sure.
I mean, that's a little mean to say in heaven, but he would know I meant, I don't mean well, but you know, it's funny. So I think he would get it.
Do you, how, I see people fall asleep almost every time I teach. Not all of them, but there's one almost every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you agree with this? I mean, do you see them? I mean, you teach at your own church a lot, so it's probably a little bit different.
No, they definitely still sleep. What I don't understand is I feel like there's some people who don't think I can see them. I know some people are just like, hey, I don't care. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to check my phone. But there are others who think that they're like clever. And I want to be like, hey.
Oh, that they're like hiding.
If you're trying to be clever, no, I see you. But if you're just like, hey, I've got little kids, they're keeping me up. I work the night shift. Like, you know, I've got a buddy who's a firefighter who'd work the night shift and then, or he would work all night, come to church the next day. I'm like, dude, if you get 3 minutes into the sermon, like that's a win for you. Like, I'm cool. Like sometimes you got to sleep, whatever. But if you're trying to pretend like I'm not going to see it, come on now. I got problems.
Right. Right. And he fell out the window. You're right.
Yeah.
Eutychus. Man, that Eutychus too. That is strong dad joke energy right there.
Here's the thing. Three kids. I'm deep in this dad life, so I can't get out of it.
Yes. Okay. Tell me about how the girls are today.
Well, I'm at the office today. First time back.
Oh, are you? Yeah. You're not at home?
No. I've got, as it's been said, my hard pants on.
Yes. And yes.
I know you went back. You went back to the office a couple days ago.
We call them real pants. Yes. I went back yesterday. I'm back home today because of the stuff I had to work on. But yeah, I went back yesterday. It's really interesting to go back to things, isn't it?
You know, I office from home for 7 years as a church planner, and I got very accustomed to if I'm warm, I have the ability to change my wardrobe to make me less hot. But
sure.
I get back to
which is a Texas problem for sure.
Yeah, and I live in Texas, and my office in our church used to be like 40 years ago, like the entrance. And so it's got like extra windows or something. Mm-hmm, and it's always like hotter than every other room. And so I almost took my shirt off today while I was working just because I thought I was back home working, which you can do when you work from home.
Right. You're allowed to do that from home. You
can't
do that at church.
Nope. If you don't know that, write that down. That is the piece of wisdom I want to share with you.
Here's a pastor tip for you.
Yep. Yep.
You cannot take your shirt off at church. Yeah.
Cannot do it.
Wow. Oh, but, so you're not even with the girls today.
No, I mean, I saw them and got them all set up and breakfast and all that stuff. And they're at home doing good, living their dream.
How different do you feel about them at the end of the pandemic than you did at the start?
The power rankings on which is my favorite shot has changed.
It shifted.
Switched toward, I used to work from home, like I just said, and in case people forgot from 3 minutes ago when I just said that, let me say it again. I used to work from home. And the thing about going to the office after having office from home 7 years, last 5 years worked at a church that had an office and all that. One of the things I miss is just being around the house with the kids. And so to jump back into that was like this nice kind of blast from the past in which I really loved. I mean, I'm not as productive working from home with three little kids, but I just like going on bike rides with the kids for breaks, which is, I mean, I like the people I work with, but it's more fun to go on a bike ride with my kids than, you know, goofing around in the office when you need a moment of break or levity. But no, my kids are great.
They are great. They are three of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I am the fourth adopted daughter, even though I'm actually older than both you and your wife.
That's debatable.
Which is fine.
I mean, it's all relative. Yeah. It's all relative.
That's debatable. Yeah. And it was so fun. A couple of weeks ago, we got to watch a movie together, even though y'all are in Texas. And I'm telling you, it was one of the most creative things that the girls had their iPad open, I guess.
Yeah, they had an iPad open. Your face was on it, and we were both.
And I had my computer open, and y'all's face was on it, and we just hit go at the same time on
Trolls 2.
Trolls
World Tour. Yeah. World Tour.
It was great.
It's a good movie. You know, let's call back to when I referenced your celebrity. I was on a podcast yesterday about I have a book that comes out, and.
Yes. Befriending your monsters.
That's it. There it is. And one of the questions I received on that podcast is a question that I have received, a billion times. And the question was, Annie F. Downs wrote the foreword. What's it like to be your friend in real life? And I get that question all the time. I was like, this is about my book. But sure, let's talk about Annie. And my answer was, she's great. She's Annie to my girls. And I think I even mentioned the movie, like, yeah, we just watched a movie. My girls love it. She's great. And so I guess my question for you is, I'm sure people ask you that all the time too. Like, hey, what's it like to be friends with Luke?
Yeah.
All the time.
My answer is, he wears as many tank tops as you think he does. It is all tank tops all the time. And
all the time.
And his... a lot of the time. Yeah. And his daughters and his wife are the coolest thing in the world is, because you and I met first before I met your wife and your kids. Mm-hmm. And the coolest thing in the world is when I meet a man and become friends with him. And then my next move is I'm going to be friends with the wife and kids, or I don't stay friends with the dude. I mean, there's just that just doesn't work for me.
There's an audition.
And so
there's an audition.
Right. And so your wife and kids are just the coolest. I mean, they're amazing. Yeah. They're so sweet.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm really grateful.
That's very true. And they love you. They are huge fans of yours. They incessantly remind me that they like you more than me in everything I do. So podcast, Annie's. Preaching, Annie's. Books, Annie's. The other day, Audrey was like... hey, Daddy, how many books do you have? And I go, well, I've written two. And she goes, hasn't Annie written like 12? And I was like, yeah, that's really nice.
Tell me what it's like to be a dad to three daughters. Are you sad you don't have a son? Have you or are you like built for this? I can tell you the answer, but
I'm built for that. I don't know.
Yeah, because I just think, I've said this before to you, but I just think there's really something so special about men who God trusts with a house full of women.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure right there.
Didn't do anything to make it happen. The Lord just handed them to you.
Yeah. I heard this guy who was a Marine and then he became like a UFC fighter he had all daughters. And he said, when you have so much testosterone, God has to balance things out by giving you a bunch of women in your house. And so that's kind of the direction I like to go with it. I'm not a scientist, but I feel like that holds up true with science.
Yeah, I believe you.
Here's real talk. When we found out that our third was a girl, a daughter, I was relieved. Because I was like, I know how this girl thing works.
Yeah.
We had two daughters. I like the direction. This has been great. I want to keep going with this thing. I don't want to mess it up. And it's the best thing. I absolutely love having little girls, partly because little boys are statistically dumber than little girls. And I don't make up the statistics. I just report them. That's true. And also, like, there's a couple weeks ago, my mother passed away. And when that happened, my daughters just ran up and just hugged me. And they just hugged me and hugged me and hugged me so much over especially those first couple of days that I couldn't imagine trying to get through something like that without the love that God shares with me through them.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about that if you don't mind for a second, because literally Friday night I watch a movie with your girls and Saturday morning your mom dies really suddenly.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sadly, I know you have some listeners who've experienced, an unexpected passing of a parent, and it never feels real. It doesn't it's still like I wake up and go, that doesn't seem, it doesn't seem right. And my mom, Annie, you met her. Obviously most of your listeners have never met my mother, but my mom's struggled with health issues for the entirety of my adult lifetime. And so it's not like I ever assumed, my mom's going to live to be like 97, like my dad's mom, but it still just seems surreal that she's not there. And obviously Mother's Day was just, 2 days ago. And it's something that like every Mother's Day, I've always said, like, you know, I know this is a hard day for some of you who want to be moms and haven't been blessed with that opportunity, or those who have a tough relationship with your mom, or those who've lost a mom. And I said that because, you know, 15 years ago, I saw a preacher named Mike Cope say it when he was preaching when I was in seminary. And I thought, oh, that seems like the right thing to say. And I've said it for years, and I finally got it this year.
Yeah. Yeah, you make those lists when you're teaching. I do it on stage too when you're teaching, because you recognize people in the audience are in those different categories.
Yeah.
But it is so different when it's you.
Yeah.
What's it been, maybe 3 weeks since your mom passed?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What's the thing you didn't know you'd feel that you're feeling?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, that's hard to answer. Partly because it's about feelings. And as people have probably figured out by now, I'm an Enneagram 7 as well as you are.
Yes. Yes.
What am I feeling? There's a fatigue of like, this is like this ongoing weight that I'm carrying. A friend of mine named Beverly Ross says like grief. She lost her daughter when her daughter was 31. And she says that, you know, grief is like carrying this brick around. And in some ways, like, I feel like I'm exhausted because you know, grief is this thing that I'm carrying around. I have a sense that it's not right, because it's not complete. It doesn't feel complete to me. Because my mom she had what my dad referred to as like their second honeymoon, when, you know, my mom would sleep, you know, 16 hours a day and wouldn't be able to get out of her bed because she had Lyme disease, which compounded some substantial nerve damage from getting hit 3 times in car accidents that none of them were her fault. And so my mom's like, there was a season where she was improving. And that time that you met her is during that, what my dad referred to as like the second honeymoon, where she was kind of coming back to life, and she was able to, like, you know, cognitively be there, emotionally be there, physically be there. And it was like the one time she traveled the 3-hour trip from where she lives in West Texas and Abilene down to Austin. And it feels incomplete, because I felt like maybe that's what, you know, my daughters could finally get to know the mom that I knew decades ago. And like, they never got to. And so it just feels like there's always going to be something that is never right and never was made right.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard you say that before about other deaths, that it was not supposed to be this way. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not in like a, I'm so shocked, it's so tragic, though that is true. The bigger zoom out onto planet Earth and look across the whole globe and go, it was not supposed to be this way.
Yeah.
It was not supposed to be this way. I saw, I'm blanking on his name right now, which people are going to scream it at me and you're going to remember. It's the guy on the West Coast. He lives in Seattle, but he does that church in LA. Judah Smith.
Yeah, Judah Smith. Yeah.
I saw Judah doing this whole thing about how, like, this whole pandemic, all of this that's going on, it wasn't supposed to be like this. This isn't the earth God could, this isn't the way God created the earth. It's changed. And in losses like your mom, I just think, it's not supposed to be like this.
Yeah. I mean, they're just moments that remind us of that. When you said Lydia 15 minutes ago, there's a memory that brought back to me of a girl named Lydia when I was a kid. And I was by my house with the friend of mine named Lydia, and we tried to cross a road and she didn't make it, and she got hit by a car. And so she's 5 and got hit by a car. And like, those are moments that she survived, but she was never, you know, mentally or physically ever the same again. And like, there are moments like where you just know, like, this isn't right. The week after you and I met, a friend of mine who was in his early 40s, father of 2, has a heart attack and passes away. And like, there are all these signs, like,
one of the like leaders in your church.
He was a super charismatic, fun guy. He was prominent guy in Austin. He was the ESPN morning guy for Austin, Texas. And I literally just saw his widow just a few minutes ago. She was helping feed some hungry people up at our building. But like, these are all signs that the earth is groaning, and like, this feeling of incompleteness that I have is part of our predicament right now, that there's this groaning and yearning for something to be made whole. And I think what that feeling of incompleteness is an awareness that there is a time and there is a place where it will be made complete again. And that groaning that I feel, because I want that relationship between my daughters and their grandma to be something that it wasn't able to be is because in hope, it will happen again. And there is a chance for it to be made right. And, you know, maybe that's what, you know, Tom Wright has been doing for many of us, is imagining what this new heavens and new earth is going to look like, where there will be redemption, where this longing for justice will be coalesced and our hope will be realized.
Yeah, it is one of those. I've been thinking when the pandemic started, Priscilla Shire's mom passed away too, right at the very beginning. And I was talking to her sister, Crystal, Priscilla's sister, it's her mother who died as well. And I said to Crystal, I was like, what does your mom know that we don't know? You know, like what's the view of what they can see happening on the planet that we cannot see?
Yeah.
And there's just so much that will be made right. And I think you're right. I think we wouldn't feel the sense of loss if this was the end. We wouldn't have the longing in us if this was the end. We would have evolved to accept this if this was the end,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you sure.
I think.
That makes sense to me. There's a line in the new Mr. Rogers movie with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. Should I?
Yeah. I'm always, like, that movie bothers me because I had a podcast lined up with the actual journalist that the storyline's based upon, Tom Hanks and the journalist.
Yeah.
And the schedule confirmation went into my junk mailbox and I just ignored it. Yeah. And I just missed it. If you do, check your junk mail. Because you might get a message from Tom Hanks. That's what I'm saying. But in the movie, there's a scene where Tom Hanks leans over to this gentleman who's at the end of his life. I won't spoil who it is. But he leans over and then he walks out of the house where this person was. And then the person's relative walks up to Mr. Rogers and says, what did you say to that person? And he said, would you pray for me? Because anyone who's that close to death is close to God.
Wow.
And there's something about that, you know, when the temporary is about to pass away and the eternal is about to be realized in front of you, I think there is something unique about that mm-hmm. I think we're craving.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Have your feelings on eternity changed since your mom passed away?
Yeah, for sure. I was literally working on this piece I was writing on death the week before my mom died. And
no.
Yeah, dead serious.
Why were you working on that?
Well, it's something that I was working on. I would have preached on it probably 8 or 10 weeks from now, and maybe it'll be in another book sometime. But I was literally on the phone that week with a friend of mine named Kevin, whose son in his early 20s passed away. I was working through this story about a friend of mine whose life ended in suicide last summer. And so I spent a lot of time on this. And the previous 2 weeks, it was all about this. And there was even one idea that, Suzanne Stabile, she's been on your podcast,
of course.
Right?
Yeah, she's been on the show. People love her. She's helped us kick off the Enea Summer 2019 last year.
That's right. That was a big deal. That was a big time.
Yeah.
So her husband, Joe, great guy. And we had lunch, Susan and Joe, like two dear friends of Lindsay and I's. And we had dinner with them a while ago. And I think it was right after my friend Greg's life ended in suicide. And so, you know, Joe was talking about death and somebody brought up the idea of like closure and seeing the body. And I was like, you know, I typically don't like to see that, just my personal preference. And then he made the point about it's really cathartic for people because it gives them a sense of closure. And so I was literally like wrestling with this idea of like closure, that we're always wanting closure. And that came to my mind literally as I was driving up to Abilene right after I found out that my mom had passed away, because it was my imminent future is to, you know, wrestle with that situation. And what came to my mind, it was almost like the idea finally clicked that I was trying to write for 2 weeks and I didn't have it. And in that moment, I would rather have not had a way to pull that chapter together. But in that moment, it was like, we're grasping for closure, but we're never going to get it. Like we get some measure of closure. We can have like some sense of, okay, I can let go. And, you know, I think a good funeral service hopefully is a way of saying, okay, there is some sense of closure, but we use the word sense because it's not really closure. Like it's not really done. It's like, it feels a little bit more done, but it's not really done. That's why like after Kobe Bryant passed away, I was texting with some buddies who are Lakers fans from California, and they're going, this feels surreal. Like it doesn't feel real. It feels surreal, as though what is normal to us is immortality. But I think part of it is because we know there is something that is eternal that has been hardwired into us. And it's distant. It feels far away, but it's there.
Yes. Yes, you're right. I don't think about eternity very well or very often. Does N.T. Wright have a book about it? Is that what you meant by he's
Oh, yeah. Surprised by Hope. It is top five N.T. Wright books. I like lists in case you haven't figured that out.
It's a top five of his.
Yeah, Surprised by Hope. I'm looking around to see if it's right behind me. But it does. Yeah, Surprised by Hope. That is, how about this? Whenever we can find Tom Wright in the States, we'll do the podcast. You and him can have your friendship begin, and we'll bring up that book and let you guys talk about it.
Okay, which one? The Paul one or
no? Surprised by Hope. That's
Surprised by Hope. I'm going to order it today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big one. It's a big book.
Is it? Is it him reading the audiobook? I would listen to that. That's what I'm going to go look for. I'm going to see if he's reading the audiobook. Did you read the audiobook for Befriending Your Monsters?
No. No.
No, you didn't. You just decided not to.
Yeah, that's because fine. My publisher's like, you know, your ideas are good, but your voice is terrible.
Get out of here. No, that's not true.
I'm not happy, but whatever. I'm grateful to have an audiobook, okay? I am. But it was just like it happened and then I didn't like email or reach out to whatever. I don't know what I should have done. Yeah. But yeah.
It's fine.
No.
It's fine.
There's a guy named Axel who's reading it, which I believe
you're joking.
Yeah, I believe that's he was awesome. Formerly in a band known as Guns N' Roses.
Oh, I wish it was Axel Rose. That'd be so cool. Hey friends, just interrupting this conversation with Luke to tell you about our friends over at the Sozo Playlist. I want to take a quick second and let you know that we have partnered with Sozo Playlist to put together a list of songs for our That Sounds Fun listeners. These are songs that I found encouraging during the quarantine season and hope you will too. Sozo Playlists create the best faith-based playlists that you can find on any streaming platform. They focus on bringing you playlists for any moment featuring the top Christian artists and worship songs of today. Whether you're going for a walk or taking a drive or hanging out with friends, you know, social distanced, or spending time in prayer and Bible study, Sozo Playlists have a variety of lists to fit your daily activity. So be sure to check out the playlist that I have put together for you guys and all the others that they have expertly curated. You can find it on Spotify or Apple Music, Pandora, or really any streaming platform of your choice. Just type in Sozo Playlist, Living Christian, to find it. That's S-O-Z-O Playlists, Living Christian. Or you can click the link in the description on this episode. I hope y'all enjoy it. Will you talk a little bit about Befriending Your Monsters? Because I think that title is very interesting. That is not something we tell Christians to do very much.
We are now, though.
Yeah,
come,
you are.
Come May 19th, we're telling them to.
Yeah, that's
right. So get ready. Here's the thing. Like, monsters are kind of a ridiculous title because we all know monsters don't really exist. There's not really like a Godzilla somewhere. There's not really Dracula. There's not really a vampire. Like, none of those things are real monsters. But they do put fur, flesh, and skin upon the very real fears that each and every one of us have.
You're right. That's what they've done, right?
Yeah. And like, obviously, sharks is... We talked about sharks for 20 minutes in the previous podcast.
Talk about sharks.
And I thought your people are going to hate it because few people love sharks as much as me, but I'm going to bring them up right now.
Oh, we have to talk about them. Wait, I won't forget. We'll save it. You've got to finish.
I'm going to do the monsters. Yeah. We'll do the thing about my love for sharks later.
Oh, we're doing it though. I won't
forget.
All day.
But like the idea of Jaws, like that is a fictitious depiction, not of an actual shark, but of our fear of being out of control in the ocean. When you're in the ocean, you can't see what's underneath you. All of a sudden you feel weak and small and you feel like something is bigger than you, right? Like, so these are all things that put fur, flesh, and skin upon the very real fears that we have. And the actual Latin word from which we get the word monster is literally the word warning. And so what I would say is that monsters have always been a warning that have invited us to either do one or two things. One, either you hide from them, like you did when you were a kid and you heard that sound in your closet, and it's pitch black in your room. You hear a sound and you think, oh, that's a monster in my closet. And so you have two options. The one option is like you hide underneath your sheets and pretend like it's not there. Or the second option is you get up, you grab a lightsaber, you grab a pillow, stuff it underneath your shirt like for protection, and you get a flashlight and you go into the closet and you face your monster. You have one of two options. And I think monsters have always been warnings that invited us to go where we don't want to go so that we can become all that God intended for us to be.
Wow.
And I think I stole that last line from you because you've got a line like that, don't you?
No, that you did not steal that from me. Yes, there's a brave version of that, but that is that's your line. And that's a very good line.
Well, I know you didn't talk about monsters, but the idea that often the place where I want to give up is just on the other side of who I want to be.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's quoted in the book, as my friend Annie F. says. Yeah, it's quoted.
I just can't understand why an Enneagram 7 would choose to write a book about monsters and pain.
Well, that's a good question. It's a dumb idea. But I think it was Hemingway who said that all good writing comes from the human heart in conflict with itself.
Oh, wow.
And I think the gift that we have to give to the world almost always comes at the place where it's most uncomfortable for us. And the gift can be a book. It can be a song. It can be that type of art. But it can also be your teaching. It can be you as a parent. It can be the kind of friend you are to someone. I think all those things are gifts that we give to the world. And usually the gifts that we can give that make the most difference, that are most meaningful and true, are always going to cost us more than we want to give.
Yeah, and I hate that. You're right. I just hate it.
But you do that with your writing. I mean, there's a reason why on your last audiobook, which Axl Rose didn't read, you read.
I wish.
And you cried, three times?
Yeah.
On the audiobook.
Yeah.
Because even though you had healing and you had it wasn't like a fresh wound, but it was still something that had wounded you at one time and it was near and dear to your heart. And that's why people connect to you. And I think that's why people are always like, Luke, what is Annie like? What is she? What does her house smell like, right? Her car, is it clean? Are the handles sticky? Is there confetti everywhere? Like, they're always asking these questions because they feel so connected to you because you've done the same thing, that you've let your pain be an opportunity to bring healing to others. And I think that's what the gifts we give the world are.
So that's why you had to do Befriending Your Monsters versus something that would be a lot easier.
How to drink plenty of water every day.
Right? How to fold a fitted sheet. I know how to do that.
That's impressive.
Thank you. This all seems very challenging, this thing that befriending. But I've read, obviously, I wrote the foreword. I've read Befriending Your Monsters. It is a hard book to write. It's an important book, but man, I told you that. I was like, man, this is hard. The way you're digging into your own story and exposing my story just by doing that.
Yeah. And that's my wife calling right now to say.
Ooh, do you want to say hi to her?
I didn't answer. Should I answer?
It sounded like the ice cream truck.
You know why? Because, not going to do that one. Nope. It would have been bad.
Okay.
Because her sweetness is my weakness. Her sweetness is my weakness.
Oh, that'll do.
That's the cleaner version.
That will do.
But monsters, it obviously, there's a lot of autobiographical stuff in there. And there are three monsters that I talk about, that the monster of comparison, the monster of more, and the monster of success. And I write about those because those are monsters that I've struggled and continue to struggle with. The idea that I find my identity based on how I compare to someone else, or how I'm doing determines who I am, or what I have, what I can experience, what's in front of me, what's waiting on my calendar for me, that all those things are what get me through. And I think underneath those are these sort of struggles and lies that people are all tempted to believe.
Yeah. And I mean, all three of those, I can't imagine a person who doesn't feel all three of those in some way. I mean, just very publicly, there was two women who have cookbooks that just had a real go at each other on Twitter. Well, one of them did in the direction of the other. And the one who ended up...
A cookbook fight?
Yeah. The one who ended up apologizing, she said in her apology, my insecurities came out and I actually just feel insecure about how successful you are. And I thought, my gosh, A, that's so honest. But B, who of us doesn't struggle with those feelings of comparison? And, you know, yeah. I mean, I just thought, man, that is such an honest and brave confession to make on Twitter in front of everyone that yeah. part of the reason you lashed out at another woman in your field was you're jealous.
Yeah. First of all, I have a lot of questions about the cookbook world.
Yeah.
And it sounds far more cutthroat than I realized it was, which is pretty awesome.
Every world is far more cutthroat than we realize when we're not in it, I think.
Yeah. That's a good point. But here, the thing about comparison is it's so hard and awkward and unwieldy to really determine the answer to some of the most basic questions like, how am I doing in life? Mm. Do I measure up? See, that's a cooking metaphor right there.
Yeah, I saved you then.
You know, because like, how do you answer this question? So the easiest thing to do is to look around at someone who's in your industry, in your profession, who's in your neighborhood, who has kids the same age as your kids, who yeah. wants to be the same thing you want to be when you grow up and go, okay, I can't answer the big question of how I'm doing, but I can see how I'm doing in comparison to them. And so that's why yeah. comparison is so easy because when I was starting off preaching, how do I determine how well I'm doing as a preacher when I'm, you know, 21 years old? I don't know what are the measuring sticks to look at? But what I did have is there was a guy who spoke at this interdenominational Bible study that I eventually took over and not like a gun in my hand, like give it to me. It's my, right. but like, when he
also,
left,
I like how you loosely say this guy, you're not going to say who it is.
Well, no, because people know I don't compare very well to him. Because he's better than me. Okay, yeah, his name was Matt Chandler.
It he's rhymes taller with than Matt me. Chandler. Yeah, his name rhymes with yeah, Matt Chandler.
Yeah, but yeah, okay, so he's taller than me. He's more successful than me. He's a better speaker than me. But you know what? He's got those weird ears. And so, you know, everyone's got their thing. Fine. So what? Move on, Matt. I can bench press more than you. But probably not. His arms are so long. No, but when I was starting off, like I was following Matt and I had no idea who that Matt would turn into Matt Chandler. And yeah. so I thought, okay, this is what he did and this is what I'll do. And then everything's going to fall. Like I'm going to just follow that same trajectory. And that's not what happened at all. And none of this had to do with Matt. Like I'm joking. He's someone of high character that I had a great deal of respect for. And if it wasn't him, it would have been someone else. Like it yeah. would have been just whoever else was nearby that was close to doing what I want to do.
Right.
And whether it's your cookbook competition or the preacher is before you, we're all trying to make sense of who we are, and people are the easiest way to do that.
Yeah, it is. It's so tempting. I mean, I wanted to jump in the conversation. I didn't because I don't need to be her, but I want to jump in the conversation and just say to both these women, like, everything you're doing is so tempting for all of us. Thank you. Like, it is so tempting to publicly tear someone else down because you are insecure and want to feel better. And it is yeah. so tempting to fight back on Twitter, on Instagram, or Facebook, or whatever, because you want to defend yourself. And it's so, I mean, every piece of it could have been me. There's no reason it wasn't me.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be easy to make fun of someone's ears just because you think they're a better preacher than you. That'd be so easy to do. But here's what I think about befriending the monster of comparison is the pull of comparison is I need to beat that person. But if you go underneath the surface, it's really not about the person. Like in the same way, the story about Jonah, you think the story about Jonah, the Israelite, the Jewish prophet who runs away from Nineveh, gets swallowed by a whale. You'd think that the story is about the monster of the whale or the fish that swallows him. But it's not about that. It's about the hatred that has swallowed his heart. And so you got to go deeper to find what the real thing is about. With comparison, it'd be easy to like, who's the better chef? Who's the better parent? Whatever.
Yeah.
But if you go underneath the surface, what you find yourself doing is you're trying to imitate someone else's voice. And you're trying to mimic them. And in doing so, you forget what your own voice is.
Right.
When I was a kid, I really wanted a parrot.
That feels very true.
Yeah. But instead, my parents got me a parakeet, which is like the cheaper version, I guess. But anyway, the thing about those animals is that when they're in the wild, they don't like talk with human voices. Like they don't say like, Polly wants a cracker. They don't say that, but instead they have their own dialect that they communicate with. But when they are in captivity, they take on the language of the people that have surrounded them. So what happens is they learn how to say, Polly wants a cracker and Luke, I am your father, but they forget their own voice.
Yeah.
And that's what comparison does. Like you end up trying
that's
to be
good.
Like a shady version, like a B-level version of someone else instead of being the best version of who God created you to be.
Yeah.
So I think that if you befriend that monster of comparison, you realize anytime you're drawn to look at someone else and say, how do I measure up? It's really an invitation that God uses to say, wait a minute, this is a reminder that you're looking at the wrong thing.
Man, Luke, you're right. You're right. And I mean,
it's a book. Yeah.
There's so much permission. That's what one of the things I really loved about Befriending Your Monsters is you really gave us so much permission to like, yeah, I bet you do struggle with this. Cause look, I named it and wrote a whole section about it. And I just always think there's so much healing and redemption that comes when we just get permission.
Yeah.
So thank you for giving us permission.
Oh, you're welcome. You have permission. One of the things that's crazy is if you go across different cultures and continents, you find very similar monsters in like these different cultural lores. Like there's in Europe, there is the Kraken, which is like this water monster. You go over to North America and in the Native American traditions, there's different like sea monsters or river monsters that all look exactly the same. Mm. And either you have one sort of like Michael Phelpsian swimming creature that can traverse, you know, intercontinental waters and like haunt all these people, or maybe it's just a universal fear that everyone has. Mm. Maybe. And yeah. I think with some of these monsters, they are unique to us because they have the fur, flesh, and skin that's based upon our reality and our parents and our family of origin and our background and our mistakes. Yes. But in some way they're kind of universal. Like these are things that everyone has been tempted to do. Henry Nouwen refers to the following three things as the three lies that everyone's tempted to believe. And these are the three things that I kind of build my monsters on. First is I am what I do, which is the monster of success. I am what I have, which is the monster of more. And I am what others say about me, which I use as the monster of comparison. So I think these are all kind of like universal things because as scripture tells us, there's nothing new under the sun.
Right, right. So what happens on the other side of someone reading this?
Well, hopefully
will they no longer compare with the other people?
Yeah, we'll solve every problem they have.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, solve it. No. That's not what we're trying to do. When there's this like small emergency center that was coming up in our neighborhood, before it was finished, like they had the yellow paint on the ground for like the parking, and they had like the lights around the building. The building looked complete. There was like shrubbery and stuff around it. Until the very end, there was this sign that hung over, which were the letters that spelled out emergency room. It was almost like they were trying to say, hey, don't think you're going to find the answers that you want here until we're exactly ready for you. They don't want to have false advertising, right? Because they can't solve what you're coming to with that problem. And if you come to the book, Befriending Your Monsters, thinking you're going to get rid of your book or get rid of your monsters, you're going to be looking at the wrong book.
Yeah.
Because the book is not entitled Eradicating Your Monsters because they don't go away.
Right.
But what you can do is learn certain things that help you befriend them and to manage them. And just like the Apostle Paul wanted his thorn in his side, which some people thought it's, struggles or eyesight or a podcaster that would come along 2000 years later, slandering his name.
Whatever. I don't slander his name. I'm sure we'll be friends. There's just a misunderstanding.
But
I probably am the thorn in his flesh. That's probably true.
But God's grace is sufficient for Annie to be there in Paul's side, just stabbing him. Mm. No, but I think the point is not that you get rid of these monsters, but you learn to befriend them and to trust that God's grace is enough to use those things to help God's spirit guide you into being who you're created to be.
I want you to tell me what you think his thorn in his flesh was. Do you know? Do you have a guess?
I don't know. I'm going to go with you. You're his thorn in his flesh.
I just always wondered. I don't know. People are allowed to make guesses about things. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, everything from his sex life to his eyesight, I've heard. I don't know.
Yeah. A lot of options. Are you going to ask him? Feels real personal. But that's got to be the first thing people ask when they see him.
Do you think people will ask him more about the thorn in his side or what F and Annie F Down stands for?
I for sure thorn in the flesh, but close second.
I'm going to break some news. Annie is actually the lead singer of Florence and the Machine.
Yeah,
and the reason she doesn't want everyone to know what F stands for is because she wants her anonymity as a famous musician.
Speaking of anonymity, they live in the ocean and so do sharks.
Yes!
Let's talk about how much you love sharks. Yes. You don't love sharks in like a sharks in like a jokey way.
No.
Revere them in a real way.
We're all in on these sharks. Like, this is not ironic. This isn't like, oh, you know, I'm trying to be cool. No, like, this is, I live and die sharks. It is my existence. No, it's not live and die. That was a little excessive. But I had a shark birthday cake when I was 5. Thanks, Mom, for the shark birthday cake. Yeah. And I have loved him ever since. There's a shark book that my parents used to read to me before I'd go to bed. And it was always shark book, shark book, shark book. Yeah. And maybe that's why I turned out to be who I am. But here's the great thing about the internet. Not only has the internet given me a podcast in which Tom Wright could become a friend of mine,
yep.
I also became friends with some people out in a little place called Oahu. You know where that is? That's a part of the Hawaiian islands.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. And so they became friends at the show, became friends, and they said, hey, come out to Hawaii and preach in my church. And I thought, oh, you know, I would love to do that. Of course, this is what God called me to do for sure. If you are a minister or connected to church in any sort of tropical island, I am going to tell
available.
You right now,
yeah.
I'm available and I am called by God for this moment. So I agree to do this. Now, in the meantime, you need to know one thing, that I have loved the work of a couple named Juan and Ocean. Ocean Ramsey is this free diver. She has, I think her longest free dive is like over, it might be 5 or 7 minutes. It's some ridiculous amount of time. Yes, it's ridiculous.
Underwater?
Yes.
Obviously.
No, it's one of those above water dives.
It's one of those above water dives, and those are even more difficult.
Yeah. So she's this amazing athlete. Juan is born in Mexico, went to Hawaii when he was like 1 year old. Yeah. And so he grew up on the North Shore, and he's this amazing photographer, husband-wife combination. And so I've followed their work for a long, long time. And so as I'm going to Hawaii, to Oahu, to preach at my friend, the Katies, or as they refer to in Hawaii, David Dem. Sure. That is the actual dialect. Yeah. So that's, anyway.
Well done,
their daughter turns out to intern for Juan and Ocean's organization. And they say, yeah, you come out and we can get you to do a pelagic dive, which means like a free dive, no, not in a cage, with sharks. And I was like,
were you scared at all?
No, because I've befriended my monsters. I'd read my book. No, okay, so I felt really cool. And so like first time I'm diving down and then a shark starts to come right toward me. I'm like, yeah, this is cool, this is cool, this is cool. And it gets close. I'm like, yeah, no, this is, I like in my head, I know they're not going to attack me, but I'm still a little bit scared. So yeah, a little bit, but.
I mean, how close did they get to you when you were down there that time? The sharks, I mean.
I didn't have a measuring tape out, but I would assume.
But I mean, could you have touched them with, like, could you have reached your one arm? You have two arms. Could you have reached either of your arms out and touched them?
I had two before the dive. Now I have one left. yeah, no, I couldn't have reached out and touched them. Annie, let me tell you something. I posted a video of me swimming with like 15 sharks. Yeah. And I don't have Annie F. Downs Instagram game, but. In comparison to the post that went up right after, which was a bunk bed that I put together for my daughters, one had like 240 likes, which is the bunk bed, and the shark one was like 30. Which, yeah, talk people about pearls like to it. Swine, pearls to swine. My Instagram people didn't like it.
I'm scrolling back right now. I'm looking right now
back.
For it.
I want a heart, a big old heart. Next
is it from
to,
this last summer?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while ago, but it seems like just yesterday since it was so amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, what you really need to Google is Ocean Ramsey Great White Shark. There was a video of her just probably 6 months before I got there where there's this 20-foot mama great white shark, and she's free diving right next to it. It is some of the most beautiful photography and video work you will ever see of someone with a white shark. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh, you're actually very close to all those sharks. I mean, not you cannot reach them with your hands, but you are in the same water as them for sure.
Yeah, like we're there.
People are gonna have to scroll back a little bit, but it's June 6th, 2019 on your Instagram.
Yeah.
I already liked it, just to be clear. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I referenced that in a sermon once and I was expressing my frustration. Like there's like 1,000 people there. One person went back and liked the picture after I complained about it.
Yeah.
One person.
I just went and commented, so. I just on a year old post. So there's that. That's what's happened in this quarantine.
That doesn't look creepy at all.
Yeah, it looks super creepy. But when all of our friends go see it, they're going to start commenting too. And it's going to get real weird on your Instagram. Oh, in the very last video, you peace out real quick when one of them turns towards you.
That's it. Yeah, it came real close. And I was like, you know, in my head, I know it were cool, but I was like, I still really like my fingers.
You can't know you're cool with a shark. You can't know that. Like, you can't be like, I knew we were fine. You don't know you're fine.
Here's Annie.
He turns right to you and you turn away quickly.
Would you do it?
Not. I don't know that there is an amount of money that someone could offer me that I would say yes to swimming with sharks.
Mm. Oh, Annie. That sounds fun, though. To get in there?
No. Mm-mm, it
you
doesn't.
Can, you don't have to like dive down. You can just stay in the top and just look at them. There'll be a bunch of people around.
I've said this comparison from stage a lot of times. Me swimming with sharks is like a Chick-fil-A sandwich sitting in my kitchen thinking it's totally safe to just sit there. It's not. I'm going to eat it because it's in my habitat and it is my food. This is the exact same with sharks when you swim with them. You are a Chick-fil-A sandwich sitting on their counter.
Okay, I'm going to fill some dead air while you Google Ocean Ramsay great white shark, okay? Do that.
I'm a fast Googler. Ocean Ramsay great white shark.
Her name is Ocean Ramsay, which if your name is Ocean, you have to do this for a living. It is also like if your name is Colt McCoy. You either have to be the quarterback of the Texas Longhorns or you have to become arrested for being an outlaw.
No
in between.
I still believe that he can do either. He's 50% there. We did this before, didn't we? Oh, can you
to being
it?
An outlaw?
No, he's 50% there of the two options.
Oh, I didn't do the full... You zoned out. The previous time I said that, he either could be quarterback of Texas Longhorns or the governor. This time I said Texas Longhorn quarterback or an outlaw. So I changed it up and you remember...
It's still true. Okay, I'm watching Ocean Ramsay. She is very... She's like a... what are those things called that swim up next to sharks? Those little things, they're on the TV.
Divers?
Huh?
Oh, like the little tiny fish? Like
yes,
the,
she's one of those.
Yeah, like there are dolphins next to her in this big gray white shirt. Okay, so here's the craziest thing.
Gosh.
Her and Juan got married, obviously, in some tropical location surrounded by sharks. No exaggeration, true story. Yep, but they do the reception when I'm in Oahu, and guess who gets invited to that party? This guy.
You mean
right
these?
Here. Me.
These shark lovers that you have been a super fan of, you got to be at their wedding reception.
Yeah, back in Oahu on the North Shore. It was amazing. And I'm talking to Juan and I'm just like, complete fanboy. Let me ask you a question. Would you be more intimidated to swim with sharks or to interview Tom Wright by yourself?
Swim with sharks. For sure. Sorry. I know the answer No, Tom Wright, also known as N.T. Wright at this point in my life. N.T. Wright will, I can handle
he's never
him once
bitten
I get
anyone.
Started. I'm just nervous. Yeah, he's never eaten any person near him. Sharks, all of them have. They all have.
that's not true at all.
I know. Sorry. I know you don't like when people. Will you tell the story real quick about Jaws as well and how that movie shaped what we believe about sharks, even though it's really not true? And then we'll ask my favorite last question.
Okay. So Peter Benchley is the person who wrote the story of Jaws, which became the movie franchise.
Right.
And it was loosely based on an issue. I think there was like 1920s-ish, 1918. Maybe that was the Spanish flu. I don't know. But those dates sound right. Where there was a story about an incident that a bull shark, which has a propensity to swim in fresh water out of the salt water in the ocean.
Yeah.
And went upstream. And like this is historically true. Like bull sharks do that. And it went up and there's a couple... attacks where someone was attacked by a bull shark. Now, bull sharks are the most dangerous sharks. You never, ever want to swim in the ocean with a bull shark. Their testosterone is the highest of all sharks. So swim with a great white shark is one thing. A tiger shark is one thing. Bull shark, a completely different story. But so there was a bull shark, like bit a couple people. And so Peter Benchley then fabricated that, took it from being a bull shark, obviously, to being a great white shark and like a massive great white shark at that, like an unfathomable size of a great white shark. And it became the story of Jaws. And after Jaws came out, which obviously did untold damage to the understanding of sharks, that all of a sudden, like sport fishing for like big sharks became very popular, an understanding of like, let's just kill all sharks, all because Peter Benchley's story was so compelling. And this like fictitious monster was so real because it put skin and teeth upon the very real fears that we have of being in the ocean.
Right. And so this one movie changed our whole perception of a species.
Yeah. He ends up writing a book. It's called The Shark Life. I'm one of the few people who bought a copy of that book, and which he basically says, hey guys, let's not kill sharks. They're an important part of the ecosystem, which is him like, hey, I've made millions of dollars off fantasizing how evil sharks could be. Let me write one book that sells like four copies and say sharks really aren't that bad.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is that is fascinating to me.
Well, I'm glad we didn't start with this because I feel like, as I said before, I feel like people aren't as in love with sharks as I am. And I don't think people would have made it through that.
Well, they did. I think they would have, by the way. I think they totally would have.
You just said, I literally just heard you say,
Because I was like, I want to tell the truth. Would we have started with that? And I said, yes.
Annie, I think you need to go to Hawaii, have one of these experiences, and then your whole world will change. I think all of your listeners would love...
I was supposed to get to go this summer and speak at a conference. Womp. At the Bloom Conference, and it's everything's canceled. Yeah. Love isn't canceled. Friendship isn't canceled.
It's not. But I was supposed to be in Malibu 3 days ago. And
were you? Yeah. Hey, is there anything we didn't talk about that you want to talk about today, Luke?
No. I mean...
We did it. I feel like I will stay strong that this was better than our first show by far, I think.
I think this was life-changing. But I want to say, I feel like we have more because we're about to record another podcast?
Yeah, we are. Okay.
There's a whole lot more to talk about.
Yeah. Hey, the last question we always ask, because the show is called That Sounds Fun, tell me what you do for fun, Luke.
Swimming with sharks.
Is that really your answer?
That's what it is. Okay. Bike rides with my daughters, swimming with sharks. My wife wouldn't let me bring my daughters swimming with sharks yet, but I feel like I think swimming with sharks with my daughters would be amazing. I'm going to give up on... Lindsay doesn't even like going on boats, so we're not going to... Like,
yeah, because I guess you do have to get on a boat and go way out there.
Yeah, like two miles or so.
Yeah. Yeah, you're... Okay, if you can talk all your girls into doing it, including Lindsay, I'll come along.
Yes. What if Lindsay just lets them go and she's on the island?
Lindsay's got to be on the boat with me. Okay, only going to go out there. I'll get in the water. Lindsay doesn't have to get in the water. Me and you and your daughters can get in the water. I'll try that. But Lindsay, I mean, do you know I had a full-on panic attack that caused me to freeze up and not be able to swim because I saw a shadow under a piece of coral reef that I thought was a shark. And my dad had to push me back to the boat and the captain had to drag me in when I was 19 years old, like I was a 2-year-old.
You know what you need to do though, Annie? You need to befriend your monsters.
Well, sure. Now we're going to do it. That's right. Well, Luke, well done. Thanks for being on the show, buddy.
This has been great. Thanks, Annie.
Appreciate you. Friends, isn't he just the best? And man, what a hard couple of months for him leading up to this and to his book launch of his second book. And so I'm thankful for y'all's kindness to him already and the kind things you'll reach out and say to him and the loss of his mom and in such a hard season. So I'm really grateful for Luke and his family. They mean a ton to me. Make sure you grab a copy of Befriending Your Monsters. It's really good, y'all. It's really interesting. And also over on Luke's podcast, I was interviewed this week as well. He is talking about each of the monsters in the book, and I got to talk about one of the monsters. I'm not a monster, but I got to talk about one of the monsters. And so you can pop over to his podcast, Newsworthy with Norsworthy, and you can see the different monster conversations they're having right now during Monster Month. If you need anything else from me, you know I'm embarrassingly easy to find. Annie F. Downs, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the places you may need me. That is how you can find me. And again, if you get a chance to take that survey real quick, it would help us a ton. AnnieFDowns.com/survey. We want to know who you are. So AnnieFDowns.com/survey. And I think that's it for me today, friends. Go out or stay home and do something that sounds fun to you. Have a great Memorial Day weekend for my friends in the U.S. And we will see you back here on Monday with a really fun episode with author and professor Karen Swallow Pryor. We'll see you guys on Monday. Have a great weekend.